Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you still with us. Before we meet our guest, I want to remind you once again to join us tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. in Annapolis at the Governor Calvert House. Just show up. Get your ticket when you get there. Your chance to have your questions answered by the governor, Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, and hear an interesting conversation at the end with Senator Barbara Mikulski. Tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., we go live 8 to 10. You can join us there. You can also secure your seat at 443-524-8181, 443-524-8181, or go to thedailyrecord.com/Annapolis-summit, but 443-524-8181 to reserve your seat or show up tomorrow morning at the Governor Calvert House in Annapolis on the opening day of the session for our Annapolis Summit. The Annapolis Summit is sponsored by the Daily Record, Stevenson University, the Maryland State Education Association, Alexander and Cleaver, VPC, the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, and WEAA. 443-524-8181. Reserve your seat. We're joined now in the studio here by Bobby Marvin Holmes, founder of Son of a Dream, LLC, a youth development consulting and media firm committed to empowering youth and families, has a new book out called, his first book, I think. Isn't this your first
book?
Yes,
it is.
Casey's Day with Daddy. And we're also joined by Ryan Turner, who is founder and executive director of the Coben Foundation, a nonprofit that develops urban youth into leaders in order to preserve future outcomes of minority communities. Good to meet you. Good to have you in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Number here is 410-319-8888. And Bobby Marvin Holmes, who proves there's a life after the Mark Steiner Show. So Bobby, awesome. Good to see you, man.
Oh, good to see you as well, as always, Mark, as always.
So talk a bit about this book you wrote first and why you wrote it, how that came to be.
Oh, you know, Mark, you know a lot about my personal story as a father.
Yes.
So Casey's Day with Daddy is based on that experience. In 2005, my oldest daughter, Renaya, her mother and I parted ways. And, you know, she was only 5 years old. I was a teen father, you know, still hung in there. Her mother and I hung in there. And we, you know how it is. Eventually, we grew apart. So, you know, 2005 until 2010, when I got married, I was a single father. And Casey's Day with Daddy is based on that experience, being a single dad and wanting to remain a part of my daughter's life, no matter what, no matter, you know, through the arguments, through the visits back and forth, the unpleasant visits to the courts, through missing my daughter and trying to stay firm in my belief that she needed me. So this book is based on our relationship. Early on, and based on me teaching my daughter about self-love, self-worth, validating her, and teaching her culture and the world that she lives in.
And so, but you're not an artist.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
So you wrote the words, but who did the
my brother, my younger brother, Rayvon Holmes, who is a Morgan graduate as well. Another interesting piece to this book is Rayvon and I, we have the same father, our biological father, but different moms. And we grew up without our biological father. He spent our whole lives, you know, in and out of prison. And battling with so many demons. So for him and I to come together and to create this work was monumental in the sense that, you know, this is a family affair, a family project based on fatherhood for the father we didn't have growing up. So it meant a lot to me to do this with him. You know, it meant a lot to me to bond with my brother and partner with my brother and complete this project. And funny enough, you know, that we talk about this, you know, Mark, I was just on the phone with my biological father yesterday.
Really?
And, you know, he is proud that his two sons, you know, did this book. And I don't think he fully understands, you know, we did it in absence of him. You know, I don't think he had fully hit him. You know, yes, you have two successful sons, talented, educated, whatever. But, you know, in that space that was missing, we still came together.
But also thankful, I'm going to turn right here to Ryan, but also thankful to, very quickly, to the mothers in your lives, mm-hmm. and the men who were with those mothers in your lives.
Yes, yes, right? Yes. You know, let me be
the
clear.
Man who raised you as well.
Yes, yes. Thank you for correcting me, Mark. Thank you for reminding me. I cannot forget, I will never forget Chris Brasher, the man who raised me since I was about 4 years old, who stepped in, met my mother, fell in love with my mother, and helped raise me to
She's
the man
lady,
I am to
mom.
Me. Absolutely, absolutely. Bless her. Love you, Mom. But I still had that male role model in my life, so I understood what fatherhood meant. I understood what family meant. And having that model, waking up to that model every day was essential. Needless to say, to every boy is essential. That those two, when someone asks me, when I work with youth today in the community, and someone asks me, you know, so how did you turn out, you know, the way you are? And I don't know, man. I wasn't a great student. You know, I don't come from privilege. I don't come from wealth. You know, I just had good parents. You know, for whatever that means to folks, I had very good parents that were determined for me to be successful, man. That's all it was. I just had good parents, and I owe a lot of what I am today to my parents.
So, Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So maybe, where do you want to begin? You want to begin with telling us a little bit about your group? Sure. And then let's jump into this Raising Strong Leaders event that's happening.
Sure, no problem. So I'm the executive director and founder of the Acoban Foundation. We're a Baltimore City-based nonprofit that focuses on early childhood literacy and communication development. We have an after-school literacy program on the west side of Baltimore called Reading Rhythm in the Arts, and we also host a parent university that's a series of workshops for the parents of the students who are in our program to help really engage those children around literacy.
So now, what is this Raising Strong Leaders, which is part of the reasons y'all are here today? Who wants
yes.
to?
All right, I'll dig into it. Well, I was on the phone talking to Curtis Black and Matt Pressbury, who are my partners in this effort. And, you know, Curtis was like, hey, man, this is something pretty cool. You have three black males, millennials, who just published our own books, and which is based on family and community. We should get together and do something together. You know, it was a no-brainer to me. So I said, yeah, you know, definitely, let's do this. So we begin the process of just putting this together, an event around family, education, and literacy, and the importance of thereof. And I mean, and the symbolism in all this, Mark, is great, and I have to point to it. We're doing this event at Center for Urban Families, which is in the heart of pretty much everything that happened in April 2015, the unrest. We're right down the street from Mondawmin Mall, where
right.
everything kicked off. And the significance of all this, because I want folks to understand this is not a cookie cutter event. This is an event is us coming together, three black males who already are active and doing work in the community and planting seeds and understanding that education is our pathway. Because we've known for years the problems and the issues and challenges that Baltimore City face. And from where I see it is, education is going to be our way out. Family, more than anything, the number one institution before government, before public school system, family is going to be our way to that, to our pathway to get there, to upward mobility, if you will. So we wanted to have this event at Center for Urban Families. We wanted to put a stamp on it, like this is a family event where we're coming together, particularly black male fathers who are all married, coming together to put this event together. And another important piece is that I didn't meet a black male author until I was an adult. And I had to sit back and think about what did that mean? I mean, what did it mean to be exposed to that? Here I am. I was an aspiring writer all my life. I've been writing since I was 19 years old. You know, back when I used to use Yogi the Bear stamps to document my short stories and my poetry. But I didn't meet a black author until I became an adult. I didn't learn about James Baldwin or Richard Wright until I became an adult. So what does it mean for a 10-year-old black male coming from Park Heights, Sandtown, Winchester, Cherry Hill, to walk up to a black male author and introduce himself and say, hey, I write as well? How did you do this? How did you make this happen? And I thought that spoke volumes. Just seeing us on this flyer, and us having this event for the community, it spoke volumes that you have access. And we forget the little things. I mean, we put a lot of work into ideas, legislation, organizations, you name it. And we forget the little things of fatherhood, family, and community. So that's how it all came to be.
So, Ryan, what's your... Go ahead.
Yeah, and so to that point, I have to say I'm so grateful that Bobby invited me to be a part of the event, because literacy is the foundation of all success. My organization focuses on early childhood literacy. We find a lot, not just in Baltimore, but all across the country, this issue of literacy seems to be a growing epidemic. One in four children in America grow up not knowing or not learning how to read. And when you look at the trajectory 20 years down the line, that impacts workforce, that impacts budgets, that impacts health care. 85% of juveniles in the juvenile court system are functionally illiterate. You know, illiteracy has connection to so many adverse things within this country. And so I think that it is vitally important that we have events like this to raise the awareness of promoting literacy. And I'm so grateful for Bobby and his team.
Thank you for joining us, Ron. Appreciate it.
So as you were speaking, I was thinking about couple of things. One, how you get people excited about literacy and reading, which is something people do not get excited about.
Mm-hmm.
we bore them with it the way we teach it in many ways.
Yes. Right.
But there's a connection, maybe, I think, between this notion of between literacy and what you were talking about earlier about and family.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
I mean,
stability of what it takes to become a learner.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think as you just pointed to, Mark, when you stuff literacy and reading down kids' throats, and it makes it uncomfortable, obviously, because someone's forcing you to do something. When I was 14, 15, no, I wasn't reading Native Son. I wasn't reading Invisible Man. However, I was a reader. You know, I was reading things I was interested in. Every month I collected the Source magazine, which is a popular hip hop magazine during that time. And I read 1,200, 1,500 word length feature stories in this magazine on a monthly basis. I read it from cover to cover without anyone telling me to. I was reading what was interested in me. Mm-hmm. What was hip hop was teaching me a lot of things and what was happening in my community.
But when
was
you were
happening.
A little boy, did you? I mean, were you like into reading when you were in kindergarten and first grade, a little boy?
Yes. It was just my mom buying me Tom Sawyer. And
your mom bought books.
Yes. And I read them. I read them. I just sat down, you know, and say, here. Right. She said, read them. And I mean, my household wasn't much of an option to do so.
Well, I mean, but that what you're saying here is important, right? Mm. I mean, that. I mean, one of the things go ahead, Ryan. I'll throw out this thing.
Yeah, no. Bobby said something just a few moments ago, and he said that he had good parents, and that reading was not an option in his
not
household.
Reading was not an option.
Right. It was not right. Exactly.
Yeah,
not reading was not exactly. Right. Not reading was.
I don't
not
want
an
the
option.
Alternative.
But what we find is that parent engagement is so important around the process of reading. Sitting down with your child, 15 to 20 minutes, and actually. Reading with your child is so important. And what I have found in embarking upon this work of literacy is that parents who do not engage with their children or who do not have a strong connection with their child's education have children who begin to fall behind very early. And it is as a result in urban communities, and I say this a lot, that there are parents who are surviving and not living. And because you have parents who are surviving and not living, they are not taking the time to really cultivate those basic early skills of engagement that the children need in order to succeed. Worried about, you know, BG&E, they're worried about, you know, everything that's going on in life, that they don't take that time to really transfer those skills to their children.
You know, folks, do join us here, 410-319-8888, in the time we have left with our two guests, my dear friend Bobby Marvin Holmes and Ryan Turner, who joined me in the studio here at 410-319-8888. I mean, how did reading play out in your lives coming up? In your own families now? I'm just curious. You want to join this conversation? We'll talk more about the event coming up this Saturday, 410-319-8888. And I was thinking about how I had this discussion with some people, and it really jolted me about a half a year ago, it really came to me. Well, we have this notion that if you don't learn how to read by the third or fourth grade, you're out of luck completely, mm-hmm. right? But then I started thinking about the millions of people who were enslaved in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. And come 1865, these freedom schools opened up.
Right.
And people from the ages of 6 to 60 went illiterate mm-hmm. into these schools, and many walking out not just reading and writing but studying Greek and Latin and mathematics. And there was a power there, this thirst and for a kind of knowledge and grabbing hold of that as a powerful tool. And for many reasons, things got beaten down over the last 100 and some years and changed. But I mean, the question is how that thirst comes back, and what we have to do to bring that thirst back.
You know, Mark. You know, with you saying that, again, going back to making reading and writing attractive, folks miss this very important part, especially when we talk about the damaging effects of hip hop culture and hip hop music. When I was about 11, 12 years old, I started rapping. Folks miss this one part. You had little black boys across this nation sitting down writing and reading to get better at their rhymes without anyone telling them to. We missed that part. We missed that part that our creativity, our imagination, and understanding the world that we were living in and understanding the challenges we were facing, we wanted to express ourselves. Mm-hmm. Much like Langston Hughes, much like Claude McKay and our predecessors before us, Gil Scott Heron, you name it. We wrote about our pain. We wrote about our devastation, and we wrote about our need to be heard. We have the same thing happening today in 2016. My mentee, who lived around the corner from the CBS that was burned, sat down and wrote about what he was seeing in his community, what was happening during that time. Little black boys write, little black boys read, and they continue to do so, but they're writing and reading about what matters to them, what impacts them. So I debunked the motion that debunked the notion that black boys, black kids in general, don't like reading and writing. It's not true. It's happening on a daily day-to-day basis. It's our job to make reading attractive to them.
Yes, very much so. And Mark, when you speak about those times of slavery, I think it really speaks to the determination, zeal, and the wherewithal that was alive within the people during that time. Now, to bring this more contemporary, I think that, and I call it putting the spinach on the pizza, if you will, in making reading and literacy very important. My program, one of the programs we host is Reading Rhythm in the Arts, where we combine reading literacy and the performing arts, and we try to make it as exciting as possible, because that is one thing that children run away from. You sit down with a book and you say, let's read these words. Mm-hmm. You know, they run from it. They get all jittery. You even see, you know, some children acting out. And so it's very important that we meet the children where they are developmentally, you know, and really get them excited about it and not associate the process of reading with something that is mundane and tumultuous.
And Mark, I think about Dee Watkins' latest book, The B-Side, Living and Dying While Black in America. It should be required reading in Baltimore City high schools.
Yes.
And I read it with the Praise Academy every Saturday, and the boys love it. They eat it up. On a Saturday morning, you have a group, a classroom of black boys sitting down reading Dee Watkins, The B-Side, and they are eating it up. They love it. They can relate to it. Why? Because the messages in the book resonate with them and their story.
No, and that's important, especially for kids who, young people who do not read and are not into reading and have not been into reading, to bring them into that world. Maybe then that opens up many other vistas beyond that, is to do just what you're saying.
Right.
That's one of the things Dee hoped to do with that book.
And what he did, I mean, I call him the James Baldwin of our time. I mean, the way he captured our experience and then articulating in a way that a 15-year-old would get it and understand it and appreciate it. I say it again, it should be required reading in Baltimore City schools.
So, again, let's go back to Saturday before we run out of time and talk about what's happening Saturday morning, January 16th at 11 a.m. at the Center for Urban Families, which is – what's the address?
Mark.
What's
happening is a discussion about family, discussion about literacy. Our good brother here, Ryan Turner, will be opening up, talking about his work with the Coben Foundation, as well as reading, rhythm, and the arts, and giving folks strategies and pinpoints on how to engage your children in a reading. Then we're going to follow up with a panel discussion with two dynamic young people, children authors, Therese Smith, who is a 9-year-old who wrote a book, Dream Big, Never Small, as well as Ali DaCosta Paul, who is 11-year-old, who wrote a book where his mom forced him to take piano lessons. He hated it so much. She got a hip-hop artist to engage him in music again. So they chronicled that experience. The mom and son co-author. See, again, we will read and we will write. You just got to find a way to get it. Give it to us. So those two will be on a panel discussion talking about how do they engage into the writing process and reading. And then we close out with a panel discussion with my good friends, my brothers, Matt Presbury and Curtis Black, talking about black fathers engaging their children in reading, as well as the importance of imagery when we look at black literature and in children's books today, the importance of introducing images of black men to little girls at age 5.
So, encouraged by Raising Strong Readers, a community discussion for parents and young people, the Bobby Marvin Holmes just described, children's book authors and teachers, a conversation this Saturday, January 16th at 11 a.m. at the Center for Urban Families, which is at 2201 North Monroe Street, 2201 North Monroe Street, just down a few blocks down from Mondawmin Shopping Center in Gwynns Falls, 410-319. What am I saying? 2201 North Monroe Street. Getting my numbers mixed up. Bobby Marvin Holmes, Ryan Turner. Good to have you both in the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mark.
And Bobby, I love watching you soar and take off and all the stuff you're doing for this community. It means a great deal.
Thank you. Good to have you here, brother. Always.
And good to have you all listening to us today. I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. And I want to encourage you all to join us tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. in Annapolis for the Annapolis Summit, your chance to ask the governor, Senate President Mike Miller, House Speaker Michael Bush, the questions you want them to answer, 443-524-8181 to secure your seat, or just come down to the Governor Calvert House on Annapolis Circle tomorrow morning, join the conversation, be part of it. Tickets available when you get there. The Annapolis Summit is sponsored by the Daily Record, Maryland State Education Association, Stevenson University, Alexander and Cleaver, VPC, the Johns Hopkins Center for Liberal Future, and WEAA. Be there and join us for that conversation. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers, Andre Melton. Our interns are Sienna Grease, Manifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.